It's Maryland Morning on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. In March, the Baltimore Sun and the University of Baltimore commissioned a poll of likely voters in the race for mayor of Baltimore. State Senator Catherine Pugh led the person who initially had led that race, former Mayor Sheila Dixon, by 2 points. A month later, another poll was conducted that showed Pugh's lead increasing by several points. By the time the dust settled after some disconcerting irregularities in the voting process were discovered, Pugh's margin of victory was very thin. Supporters of Senator Bernie Sanders were outraged this week when the AP declared Hillary Clinton the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party a day before the California primary. That declaration came after a poll of superdelegates revealed that enough of them planned to vote for Hillary Clinton at the convention next month to give her enough total delegates to secure the nomination. So who knows how many Sanders supporters heard that news on Monday night and decided not to vote on Tuesday? Did the press improperly influence the outcome in the California primary? How much does polling influence your choice when you vote? How reliable do you think polling data is? How has polling changed as technology has evolved and information about so much of what we prefer is readily accessible to marketers and politicians, our friend, and even our enemies? My next guest knows all about this. Steve Robbie is the founder and president of OpinionWorks, a research organization based in Annapolis, and he joins me this morning in Studio A. Good to see you, Steve.
Good morning, Tom. Good to see you.
So let's take us back to April. Early April, you did a poll in the mayor's race. How did those numbers line up with what actually happened now that we've had a certified and then an uncertified and then a recertified bunch of results in that race? How close were you?
You know, I think we did pretty well. The pecking order was correct. We had Pugh leading with 31. We had Dixon with 25. So they were 6 points apart. We showed Embry in third place with 9, followed by Warnock and Stokes. So those were the top five. When Election Day came, that's how they fell out. The final margin was 2 points. I think it's been certified at 2 percentage points, 37-35. So, and Embry was at 12. So we showed all the candidates increasing their support. A little bit or a lot between those 3 weeks when we polled and Election Day. But clearly, Pugh's momentum was somehow blunted during that time, if we were accurate.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, because the primary was April 26th. The polling that you did was the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of April. So happened in the last few weeks of the campaign to tighten it.
Yeah, and I think what happened in those last 3 weeks is that the battle was joined between Pugh and Dixon. I think that when the Baltimore Sun put on their front page this 6-point margin, that focused everybody's attention. And I think it joined the race between the two leaders to an extent. I mean, you want to talk about the impact of polling on a race. I think the focal point became the battle between Dixon and Pugh at that point. And we recall that Pugh received some very significant endorsements in the days after that. So I think Dixon's campaign became hyper-focused. There was a lot more negativity flying back and forth. I think Pugh got into a few of her own problems during those final couple of weeks. And all of that added up to make it a tighter race in the end.
And there really is an impact because at one point in those last few weeks, Senator Pugh was making the argument that if you didn't want Dixon because of her, you know, ethical challenges or and the problems that she had when she was removed from office a few years ago, that she, Senator Pugh, was really the only viable alternative, that a vote for any of the other candidates was, in quote-unquote, a wasted vote because it was so close. So the polling data became part of the campaign pitch, didn't it?
Well, it did, and I think, you know, I have mixed feelings about that. I have to be very honest about that. I think it's, I don't want to be part of the process. I don't think polling should be. But on the other hand, when you have a race with, you know, many candidates, 11 or 12 candidates, some of them well-known, some of them not known. How do the voters sort that all out? And I think all the media people and all of the other observers were looking for ways in which they could kind of figure out who was gaining some traction with the voters. And so a poll does help at least give a sense of where voters are finding some affinity. And so it plays that role, I think.
Now, the people you polled, there are folks who ask me constantly about the methods that you use to poll. And one of the things that they bring up all the time is cell phones, because it used to be you called landlines. And the assumption is that the people who still have landlines are dinosaurs like myself, who are older, who still have homes in which landlines are installed. Almost everybody else, if you're under 30, you've never owned a landline in your life. Do you reach people in those demographic brackets that are not older, that perhaps haven't voted before? Do you ever take into consideration those kind of folks, or folks, for example, who can only be reached on a cell phone? How do you find those numbers and how do you reach those people?
Sure. And I think, as we all know, that cell phones are really important to reach people that are younger, as you said, potentially more mobile, maybe a little bit lower on the socioeconomic scale. And so it's very important, if you want to be representative, to include those. I think the job of polling in a political primary is a very special job, though, because the people that tend to turn out in a political primary tend to be people tuned into the process. Their education levels tend to be higher. They are older by far than the average resident of the community. So while cell phones remain very important, and we do include them in great numbers in our polling, even in primaries, not as important as they will be in November for the general election, when you've got a widespread voter turnout and you want to reach everybody.
So how do you find cell phone numbers of people? Are they as readily accessible to you as landlines? I mean, you used to just have the white pages, and now what do you have?
Yeah, we used to take the white pages and draw lines for every 20th voter resident and just call them. But, you know, I hate to tell everybody, but, you know, actually cell phone numbers are available now to commercial people. We all know there's some very strong federal law that keeps telemarketers from dialing our cell phones, and those laws work well sometimes and not so well other times, but in our case, as survey researchers, we have to be very careful how we dial cell phones and be very respectful and make sure people are in a safe place when we call. But we're able to actually take the voter file from the Baltimore City Board of Elections and match it against a commercially available list of both landline numbers and cell phone numbers. And so we can take people with a history of voting or newly registered, match phone numbers to that, and then call.
Steve Robbie is the president, CEO, and founder of OpinionWorks. It's a research organization based in Annapolis. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. We are asked our opinion as American citizens constantly.
Yes.
I was appalled, frankly, a couple of months ago when I heard a national news organization, I think it was NBC, and it possibly was repeated by CBS, giving the results of a SurveyMonkey poll in the national presidential race, showing that Trump was ahead of Clinton by 6 points or something. It seemed to me that that was about as unreliable a gauge as you could possibly imagine. We've all taken SurveyMonkey things where, you know, you answer these questions on your computer. Lord knows who's answering those polls. How does your job now fit into this panoply of these surveys that marketers and companies and people are constantly making of us as the public?
You know, I have to say, by the way, just parenthetically about SurveyMonkey, that the polling director, the person who's gone over there to run their polls, is Mark Blumenthal, who was at the Huffington Post. And he's a college friend of mine. He actually is a very talented pollster. So I have some confidence in them. But I think your point is very good. I mean, there's all kinds of polling going on. There's people doing internet polls. There's people doing robo polls where a recorded voice calls you and you press a number. And that's a big problem. So, you know, we don't do those sorts of things. I think it's very important to call people with live operators who are trained, who are objective and can ask questions in an even-handed manner.
There are clearly people are using polling as a way into a voter or a buyer's psyche. They are sort of flattering them by asking their opinion in order to find out stuff about them so that they can send them marketing materials in the future. And the politicians are not immune to this. I mean, they do this a lot. How much profiling, as it were, how much data do you want to know, need to know, think you have to know in order to be accurate in your results when you're doing primary election polls or general election polls?
Well, you want to know some things about the voter. You want to know some demographic facts such as gender and age and race and ethnicity so that you can make sure you're being representative. I think that's the most important thing from my standpoint. I would just say, Tom, if it's okay, that I think it's important that the public be responsive when people call with polls. I know we're all cynical about it and we believe that people are just pushing marketing at us. But, you know, this is the way that important public health data is collected in our society by the CDC. This is the way that public sector agencies gather data to make important decisions. And so I do hope people out there will answer their phones, because it does serve an important public purpose.
You are a leader in the science of sampling. You know how to do this, and you develop these methodologies that are different depending on the poll that you're going to take. When you're going to be polling about people who are inclined to vote for Mr. Trump or Secretary Clinton, what kinds of methodologies then would you use? We all have these notions that the Trump voter is this white, angry male, and the Clinton voter is an older woman, perhaps, you know, that kind of general, those kind of generalities. How do you dig down and figure out what's real?
Well, how you dig down and find out is just by being very careful and objective when you ask. I was just in West Virginia last weekend doing focus groups for the public health department among women who are on Medicaid who aren't getting screened for cancer. And we just, for fun, at the end of the focus group, asked people what they thought about the presidential race. And several of the women felt that Trump was the answer for them, and for very non-traditional reasons. I mean, I think we who are observing politics need to recognize that it's not always a simple answer. You try to put people into little boxes and say all the Trump voters are angry white males, but that's not true. And I think it's really important for us to look with a more discerning eye at these things and be willing to look at the complexity and how confused and ambiguous it is for many voters to figure this all out.
When things like the primary that happened in Michigan happened and the polls were way off. Senator Sanders wasn't given a chance to win the primary in Michigan, and he ended up winning big. When that happens, when you see those results on TV, what do you think?
Well, we all scratch our heads. I mean, Michigan was a great example. And, you know, there was an open primary where independents could vote. And so it was a harder electorate to get your arms around. But, you know, there could have been a big shift that occurred. It's always interesting when everybody misses it. You know, when one or two pollsters are way off, then you can blame their methodology. But when everybody misses what's going on, then something else is at work and you have to figure that out. And Michigan was sort of a one-off that didn't happen after that. So there were some factors there that were occurring. And of course, we all, you know, in the community of polling organizations, we all look at that and get nervous and so on. But anyway.
All right. Steve Robbie, the founder and president of OpinionWorks. It's a research firm in Annapolis. A few of his recent projects included conducting polls on behalf of the Baltimore Sun and the University of Baltimore in the months leading up to the primary in April. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Lots more coming up. Stay with us.